And with that, then we'll move, that case will be taken under advisement, and we'll move to the sixth case, Winters versus Taylor, 082994. And Mr. Winters.
Good morning, gentlemen. My name is Brent Allen Winters, and I speak for myself today, and I speak only in the pleasure of this court. I've never argued before this court. Indeed, I have never been a plaintiff in any legal action. I did not request oral argument, but I'm happy to be here if I may be of assistance in any way. Today, I request the court to order remand of this case back to the state court from whence it originated. In the alternative, I would request an order for an evidentiary hearing so that the scope of employment of federal public defender John Taylor can be determined on the merits. Thus far, no opportunity has been afforded to do that. Mr. Winters relies on his brief today and presents a couple of points in support of his position. The gist of this case, may it please your honors, is due process, and specifically the process set forth in the Westfall Act of 1988. The case is a common law slander action against federal public defender John Taylor. The case was removed to the federal district court without attorney general certification, or without request for it, I should say more importantly. Then the federal district court dismissed the case for lack of subject matter jurisdiction, but without any hearings to determine whether Taylor's slander was within the scope of his agency as a federal employee.
Now, are you emphasizing scope of employment because you concede that he's a federal employee?
Yes, Your Honor, we concede that. And scope, in most of the cases that I've consulted, seems to be the sticking point. And the Attorney General's office, according to the Supreme Court, may certify that the public defender was indeed public defender when the slanderous statements were made, or in the cases when the tort was made or done. But a hearing is still available to prove whether that tortious act was done in furtherance of his principal, in this case the United States. Thus, the case calls for consideration of the Westfall Act, 28 U.S.C. 2679 D1.
Well, what about the stated grounds of removal, 28 U.S.C. Section 1442? That authorizes removal apart from the Westfall Act, doesn't it?
Yes, it does, Your Honor. But I argue that the Westfall Act applies in this case because he alleges that he is a federal public defender and therefore an agency of the United States.
Well, if it's removed under 1442, why should it be remanded to the state court?
Because there's no federal issue on the face of the complaint. And federal issues are not allowed to be raised as a defense for purposes of removal, Your Honor.
But under 1442, the federal employee would have to assert that they had some federal defense in order to gain the benefit of that removal.
Yes, Your Honor, I confess I'm not following your questions.
Well, what I'm concerned about is the jurisdiction of the district court. You're contending that the district court had no jurisdiction. seemed to me that 1442 would have allowed removal of your claim, even though it's a state law claim, to the district court.
In that case, Your Honor, still a hearing would be afforded to Mr. Winters that he may determine by on the merits, by evidence, whether this federal public defender acted cleanly and clearly within the scope of his authority.
Well, wasn't that determined in the first case, the first time you filed this when it was removed?
The court made a decision, Your Honor, but made the decision without evidence being presented. Further, Your Honor, the court made the decision on errors of fact, and the totality of the circumstances were misunderstood.
The only real error was that Judge Gilbert thought that the three of you were nearby when the statement was made, and in fact you weren't there at all.
Well said, Your Honor.
That's really the only error.
Yes, Your Honor. But the cases indicate,
in terms of the conditions under which it was said, near the time of a court hearing, either during or subsequent to actual representation of your co-defendant, those facts were right.
Yes, Your Honor. When it comes
to allege in your complaint that your co-defendant had attempted to terminate Mr. Taylor's services, right?
Yes. Yes, Your Honor.
So that was known by Judge Gilbert in the first case. I'm talking about the one,
yes,
the one that was dismissed, from which there was no appeal taken.
Yes, Your Honor. You've stated the facts as they were in the record. But whether I, Mr. Winters, were present when those slanderous statements were spoken is an important point in the case law in Illinois as to whether they were spoken in furtherance of the principle or whether they were motivated primarily by the passion of the person who spoke the statements. And that would go to scope, Your Honor. And that decision of the Honorable Judge Gilbert was made with a false understanding of that. He commendably corrected that, of course. The question then being, what triggers the invocation of the limited yet formidable power of the federal judiciary? And the Westfall Act in the cases, particularly Gutierrez de Martinez, 1515 U.S. 417, gives an analysis of the statute and clears up the confusion that did occur among the circuits. And it stands for the proposition that the plaintiff is afforded an opportunity to prove the issue of scope, Your Honor. So for an order for Taylor to have remanded the Winters action to federal district court, he must have first requested Attorney General for certification that his slander was within the scope of his agency. And if the Attorney General's office has refused to do so, as apparently has happened in this case, then he also can request a hearing so that he can prove it up. But if the Attorney General, Your Honors, certifies that he was acting within the scope of his agency, in the final analysis, what that really does is shifts the burden to Mr. Winters to prove that it was not. And Mr. Winters would request the court that he have an opportunity to prove that.
How in good faith could you do that, given that Mr. Taylor was appointed by the court? He's a full-time employee of the Public Defender's Office, and even as best you present it, his client attempted to fire him, and they had this to-do outside the courtroom shortly thereafter. His appointment's not over until the judge says it's over. As a matter of law, only the judge can relieve Mr. Taylor of his responsibilities. So how in good faith could you possibly show that this is outside the scope of his employment?
Because it was not simply within the furtherance of his duty. It has to be decided, Your Honor, according to the law of Illinois, and
talking with his client, even after his client's attempted to fire him.
Your Honor, the way the affidavit set forth, he was not talking with his client. His client was left in the conference room. He charged out into the public area of the federal courthouse and loudly spoke, maybe yelled. The evidence will indicate these things, but we want an opportunity to probe that. And if he did so, the question again is scope. And he wasn't speaking to his client.
Did you want to save the rest of your time?
Thank you, Your Honor.
All right. Thank you. For Mr. Taylor, Mr. Williams.
Thank you, Your Honors.
I'm curious why you're here instead of someone from the Department of Justice, U.S. Attorney's Office.
We were asked to handle the case, or Mr. I believe Mr. Parsons asked Mr. Kavanaugh to become involved in the case. And
do this a lot?
I'm sorry?
Do this a lot?
Do I personally?
Does your office do this? Civil representation?
Not that I'm aware of. Not that I'm aware of.
Your client could request representation by the Department of Justice, couldn't he?
I believe that would be an option that he could pursue. I believe that's an option he could pursue, Your Honor.
I'm curious, why not? Why hasn't he?
Well, I'll be honest with you, Your Honors. I don't know all the details as to why the option that we would be handling the case was arrived at. I could speculate. I know some underlying facts. I can say this. I would say that based upon what little I know, I wouldn't feel comfortable disclosing the reasons for that decision for a couple of reasons. First of all, I would be speculating as to some points, and I think even if I knew all of the details and would not be potentially misleading the court about that, I wouldn't want to disclose those in any event because I think that those would be privileged communications. Those would be would fall within the scope of work product at the very least. And so for those reasons, I wouldn't feel comfortable disclosing those, but even to the extent I did. I apologize.
Spinner, your mission is the representation of the indigent who are accused of crimes.
Correct.
That's pretty far afield from civil representation of a fellow public defender.
I would say that is correct. In terms of, in general, that is true. And certainly our mission as a federal public defenders, that is true. Now, nevertheless, you know, I'm personally admitted to practice here in this court in the Southern District of Illinois. There have been other times where I have been requested to do things on behalf of the court in the Southern District based upon simply a member of the bar. So I don't think it's unprecedented that there might be times when we would step outside of our traditional role. But I do understand the court's question on that.
One of the problems with it is perhaps a lack of familiarity with the Westfall Act, but Tort Claims Act, res judicata concepts and things of that nature. It's a little bit like a fish out of water.
I'd say that's definitely a potential problem. I can't disagree with that as a potential issue.
I didn't mean to get you off track of your argument, but it is of concern that your client has failed to pursue the what would be expected ordinarily in the under the Westfall Act.
I understand the court's concern. I do understand the court's concern in that regard, and I understand why the court's asking these questions, and I apologize for not being able to give any detailed responses to that. I know that these are matters outside the record, but I still understand that why the court is curious about those issues. That being said, Your Honor, I think, though, despite all of what may have happened before, as we sit here today, this boils down, first of all, to issue preclusion. And what the case before the court, as it stands right now, in the procedural posture it's in right now, can be decided purely on issue preclusion. And I do believe that the court below based its decision in purely on issue preclusion. Certainly, claim preclusion was addressed, and that was not the basis of Judge Gilbert's decision to dismiss the claim because there was an additional claim that was brought. He had to examine whether or not that additional claim there had been a waiver of immunity. But the basis of the dismissal the second time around gets back to issue preclusion completely. And Your Honors, you alluded to this in your questioning of Mr. Winters. The issue is this case was removed under the basis of Section 1442A. Under that section, removal is proper if one can assert a federal defense. A federal defense was asserted, that being the defense of sovereign immunity based upon Mr. Taylor's actions within the scope of his employment. And that was the basis of the first dismissal. Now, I recognize further that there may be a slight complication to look at based upon the fact that it was dismissed, as stated in the order, on the basis of jurisdiction. And Judge Gilbert did note that in his second order dismissing this case. But if you look at that order, which begins on, I think, Appendix 29, his first order in the 07 slander case, it is clear that the basis of that order is the issue of sovereign immunity and scope of employment. So that was the basis of the dismissal. And because of that fact, the issue was fully litigated in that previous federal case, the issue of scope of employment, which is what this ultimately boils down to.
Isn't federal sovereign immunity with respect to federal government employees totally encapsulated in the Westfall Act?
Well, I believe, Your Honor, that within, if you're referring to whether or not we're completely barred by asserting other bases as opposed to 26, 79, and 80, I don't think that there's anything that states that we can't assert Section 1442 purely as a basis for removal. And that
I'm trying to figure out what you meant when you argued sovereign immunity to Judge Gilbert and what he meant when he included that in the language in his order in the first case. And what do you mean by sovereign immunity?
Well, we're referring to Section 1442A, and so then the issue is whether or not the actions that Mr. Taylor engaged in were under color of law or color of his authority as a federal employee. He was appointed under the Criminal Justice Act, and because of that, his actions with respect to that act are inclusive within the definitions under 1442.
But there are statutory procedures as to how, in a situation like that, a federal employee has to give notice to the United States, and the United States comes in and takes over the case.
I agree, Your Honor.
And you didn't do it.
Well, that's true, with the exception of...
The United States never became a party here. The sovereign never asserted sovereign immunity.
That's true.
Does your client have the right to assert sovereign immunity?
I believe he does. Because, for one thing, even if you look at the provisions in 2679 and 2680, even those provisions allow for an individual to assert removal, bring the case to federal court, and seek a determination as an individual.
If the Attorney General declines.
Well, that's how the order is stated. That's how the statute is stated. But it allows for a determination on the part of the district court, which
after
is what did happen here.
After a hearing, and that apparently is your opponent's point. Judge never held a hearing.
Well, there wasn't an evidentiary hearing, but there was litigation on the matter. I mean, the fact of the matter was that the pleadings were filed. The judge made a decision based upon the pleadings. The judge made a decision based upon what he believed were the undisputed facts contained in the record based upon the complaint that was filed, both complaints that were filed, and made a determination that on the basis of 1442, that there was, in fact, an issue that we had correctly asserted scope of employment.
So your point basically is that the judge, in effect, said that he was within the scope of his employment, that the sovereign was protected. That was his basic holding. When your client got sued the second time, he had a right to remove the case, saying, hey, wait a minute, there's a prior judgment saying that I acted within the scope of my employment. and I shouldn't have to go through this again.
Absolutely.
That basically is your case.
That's right? It. And that's the primary basis of the case, for sure, in terms of the issue of issue preclusion, because it happens.
Why isn't that res judicata? Why isn't that claim preclusion?
Well, because in this particular case, I think issue preclusion is more properly what is asserted based upon the wording in Judge Gilbert's first order. He dismissed it on the basis of jurisdiction, and I think he later acknowledged that that really wasn't the basis of the dismissal, was simply a finding that Mr. Taylor was within the scope of his employment and that, therefore, sovereign immunity applied.
Your argument is that we should look at the substance and not the form of Judge Gilbert's order, right?
Exactly. And that's why...
And the substance, you say, is that he really 12b-6 this thing, right?
Absolutely. And I think that's clear from the substance that... And that's why we're asserting issue preclusion, which is also what Judge Gilbert relied on in his second order dismissing this case. He relied on...
He dismissed the action.
Yes.
All right. He dismissed the action, and then the same, in effect, the same case is filed again.
Right? Correct.
I don't see why that's not res judicata.
Well, I believe that the reason that he didn't rely on res judicata is because of the fact that the court believed that it had mistakenly, in its order, said that there was a lack of subject matter jurisdiction.
Should Judge Gilbert's missteps bind us?
Well, I think it binds, whether you call it res judicata or claim preclusion,
you'll be happy.
It's fine either way.
Okay.
But I understand the basis for Judge Gilbert's order in that the issue had been decided, and so that is a solid ground upon which it can be decided again. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Winters, how much time? 1 minute.
Your Honors, Judge Gilbert said in footnote 1 of his second order in dismissal the second time, what I would consider a different case, said the court may have erred in dismissing Winters' first suit for lack of subject matter jurisdiction instead of on the merits, and that's the way Mr. Winters took the first order, and therefore Mr. Winters refiled the case in state court. He filed his common law slander case simply, and it comes to this court as scattered fires. But I believe that proper process under the Westfall Act would cover a multitude of confusion in this case. One court said that process in the Westfall Act cannot be swept away like so much dust. And I can't find that site right now, but if your honors are interested in it, I'll get it to you in a couple of days.
Well, I have no doubt that it's important, but it seems inevitable. It seems inevitable. Your concession that he's an employee, takes care of part of it, within the scope, seems just a virtual certainty. So how can you in good faith pursue the claim?
Because I believe he was not within the scope, your honor. When he spoke it, he was speaking out of his own passion. And the law in Illinois is clear under the restatement, and Illinois follows the restatement of agency and also the restatement of respondeat superior. And that's the standard there. That's my good faith claim. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, counsel. And the case will be taken under advisement.